gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show.
Take a deep breath.
It's raining in New York. I got here about 4 seconds ago.
And whatever you just did with the lights makes it so I can't see you because there's a big glare on the screen.
Oh, pardon me.
That's okay. There, that's better.
All right, Thank you, Mr. Skype. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. A big, big show. Senator Bernie Sanders on the big show today. Representative Linda Sanchez. And, of course, our Tuesday pal, Charlie Pierce, author of Idiot America, humorist extraordinaire from the Boston Globe.
And he has a new blog at Esquire.com that we can ask him about. I know, right?
StephanieMiller.com, the same old website.
Yeah.
But with new things on it. You can email us all there. Executive producer, Crystal Boyd, voice deity, Jim Warder, me, Stephanie Miller. Thank God that we have a reporter who's won awards and stuff who is prepared for today's show. Dave Mattingly, you know, he's won a couple of Emmys his own bad self for environmental reporting.
Yes.
And he has recently spoken to the CEO of BP. We are going to get an update on the oil spill in the Gulf. Dave, thanks so much for taking time for us. Hello, Dave. David, are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. You sound more prepared, and you've been reporting from the Gulf for the last couple of weeks, haven't you?
Yeah, the disaster that just won't end, and of course we're not going to go home until, you know, something's cleaned up here.
David, it must be, I was going to say, particularly for a terrific reporter like you, that must be frustrating, the fact that we just keep saying we don't really know what's going on, right? We don't even yet know how bad the spill is or what's happening underwater, right?
That's what the most troubling thing is about this. The Gulf of Mexico has been turned into this giant petri dish. We're going through an experiment right now. We have never used these dispersants in this sort of quantity. We've never used them underneath the surface of the ocean before. And they're sort of making this up as they go. They're trying to use the best science that they have available to them. But, you know, we're in new territory here. And one government official actually had a very telling statement about a week ago. It said, and I thought it was very appropriate. She said, "We are in uncharted waters here."
Ah, yeah. Well, David, interesting you bring up the dispersant because, I mean, it really, talk about the layers of this disaster. You know, we were saying that scientifically that's part of the problem, right? We don't even know if this is even worse, what they're doing with the dispersant. I mean, granted, it keeps it from getting on shore, correct?
The dispersant. The way it works is that it breaks up these big slicks that we used to see in the past from these oil slicks, like what we saw with the Exxon Valdez, that big, you know, just big arm of oil slugging a coastline, decimating everything in its path. What we're seeing now with this dispersant is that it breaks it up into little globs and it sort of sinks throughout the water column. So you don't see it forming on the top in this giant pool that we used to see. And this is a toxic material. It's not as toxic as the crude oil. So there's a trade-off there. I mean, you're keeping this oil from being this big, menacing, and completely devastating monolithic thing, but you're breaking it up into smaller pieces. So,
here's what I was going to ask you, David, is that, you know, scientists obviously are saying the dispersed oil itself as well as the dispersant might be, you know, cause long-term harm to marine life, which we may not know, and it may go on for a decade, correct?
Exactly. We're fighting a poison with a poison. And again, we've never seen it used in this kind of quantity and never in this way.
Well, obviously, the other thing that we've heard, I'm sure you've reported on too, is that the kind of dispersant they use, this, what's it called, Corexit? I mean, it's kind of, I've heard it described as a chemical the oil industry makes to sell to itself, basically. And so now there are reports that, according to EPA data, it ranks far above dispersants made by competitors in toxicity and far below them in effectiveness. I mean, so there's another, could be another scandal within a scandal, right?
Well, definitely there's something there to seek out, and we are trying to do that. The answers we're getting from BP and from the government right now are that this is what was available. They had a supply line ready to deal with their needs. And, you know, they leave it up to the responsible party to decide what they're going to use. So the government's not going to step in and say, you have to use this kind of dispersant, because they already have a list of pre-approved dispersants that are already government approved. So that's the government's involvement there. Now, it's
except that
decide pretty much what they're going to use and what they're going to get.
Right, except that, I mean, clearly there's already been suggestions of conflict of interest. There's a, you know, BP board member who served as an executive at the Nalco board, which makes the, you know what I mean, obviously this gets kind of convoluted, but I believe of the 18 dispersants who's used the EPA's approved, 12 were found to be more effective on this kind of oil, I guess, than the one they're using. So, I mean, you know, in addition, I know you've probably heard they used this in the Exxon Valdez cleanup, and workers suffered health problems there. Including blood in their urine, right, kidney, liver disorders, that sort of thing.
It's kind of hard to compare the Valdez to this issue, what we're seeing in the Gulf of Mexico. It's a different kind of oil. It is a different type of contact that workers were having. Right now we're seeing airplanes flying over this, dumping massive amounts on the surface. And now something we're not seeing is how they're deploying this beneath the water at the source, spraying this dispersant, mixing it with the oil that's escaping from that pipe down at the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. We're not watching that. We're not seeing that. And the answers we're getting from officials in the U.S. government is that this decision was not made lightly. They know they're downsized to every decision that they make, every attempt that they make to try and mitigate this. But they say this is the best course of action they have for themselves right now.
David, what is your take on what's happening now? So this insertion tube, I guess, is working, but only to a degree, correct? It's only getting, what, a fifth of the oil that's coming out or something like that?
Well, it depends on what kind of estimate you get of what is actually coming out of that pipe. The government estimates and BP have been saying we're looking at about 5,000 barrels a day coming out of that pipe. So now we have this insertion tube in there collecting about 1,000 barrels a day, which is something we can actually measure because it's coming up to a ship on the surface. So are they getting just one-fifth of the oil that's coming out of that pipe? We had hoped for a lot more. We heard when they were trying to put a containment dome on there, they were talking about 80 to 85% possibly that they would collect. And then you have that other layer of uncertainty where you have independent experts who say that they've made their own calculations and say there could be 10 times that amount of oil coming out of there. So if they're just collecting 1,000 barrels of 50,000 barrels, that's nothing.
David, we're speaking to David Mattingly, CNN national correspondent. You spoke to the BP chief executive, Tony Hayward, a week ago. What was your impression of him? I mean, it certainly seems, you know, for those of us that watch the hearings, they're doing a lot of blame shifting and finger pointing, aren't they?
Well, BP, the way they describe it, and the way Tony Harris described it to me was that Tony Hayward.
Hayward, right.
The way he described it to me was that BP's role in this operation was sort of as the architect. They provide the plans. It's their oil down there, and they provide the plans on how to extract it. And then you have this drilling company, Transocean, comes in, who it's their responsibility to be able to do this in a safe a correct way. And then you have Halliburton, who comes in to create the cement cap on the well, which is what was supposed to be just in the completion stages. You have three very large parties out there acting together to make this oil well happen. And at various points, they all have certain responsibilities, and that's part of what you see happening in Washington. But the president has made very clear he doesn't want to hear this anymore. And frankly,
right,
I haven't run into anyone else who wants to hear it either. They want to know, what did you do wrong, and how can we keep from this happening again?
Yeah, absolutely. David, did you happen to see the 60 Minutes piece, though? I mean, again, I don't know, you know, what's been demonstrably proved or not, but it seems to me that, you know, there was this apparently this argument between the Transocean and the BP guy, and, you know, they're saying it BP won the argument, and essentially it was to get the oil out faster that led to this, you know, whatever. I believe me, it was way above my pay grade technically. It was something about the drill bits and the things, like, but I guess the long and short of it is that, you know, BP is the one that made the decision to, you know, drill in a certain way that, you know, led that there, this guy on 60 Minutes said led to this. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, we've had individuals come out with their own stories about what was happening. The bigger picture is yet to be revealed. And I've actually been impressed with some of the questions that have been asked in some of these congressional hearings. You know, usually when you have these congressional hearings on the Hill, you know, people are asking questions that further out their own political agenda. But a lot of these questions are really cutting right at the heart of it. What did you know? When did you know it? Why did you make these decisions? Mm-hmm. And those are the kind of questions that need to be asked, and that's how we're going to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, we've all had to read the manual on because it does, you know, I'm sure you deal with this as a reporter. You're like going, what the hell do I know about an underwater drilling rig? And then, you know, you learn all the, because like you say, a lot of it, just to a layperson, you go, well, that doesn't sound like it's going to work. The top hat, what the hell's that? You know?
You know, every time we have a news conference, they come out with a new phrase, and then so who came up with that term?
You know, but you're Googling madly. What the hell does that mean?
But if you look at it, I think all these were come up from discussions between engineers, and these descriptions like the top hat, the kill mud, all sorts of stuff we're hearing right now, the junk shot. Those are exactly what they are. The junk shots, they're going to shoot a bunch of junk into the system to clog it up.
What is the status of that? Are they going ahead with that?
What they're doing right now, they're doing what they're calling a top kill. They're going to kill this thing from the top down. And, mm-hmm. again, the phrase exactly what it means. They're going to be able to do this using something called kill mud. And they're going to kill this well by pumping the substance that they call mud directly into the well to essentially beat the flow, clog it up, and then throw some cement on top of it until they can and seal it up temporarily until they can drill that relief well down way below to finally seal it off permanently.
Right, right. Unbelievable.
If that doesn't work, and if that doesn't work, they've got other things ready to go. They've got that junk shot ready to go. If that top kill doesn't work, then they've got another blowout preventer they're ready to install. BP essentially.
Unbelievable. This is the best.
This one dome this time, like they did a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Unbelievable. This is the best technology we have. You know, there's guys at the table go, what if we shoot some tires in it? You know, it's just really.
I asked Tony Hayward about that. I said, look, you're smart guys. You drill for oil a mile under the ocean. Why didn't you see this coming? Why weren't you better prepared for it? And his answer has always been, we thought we were prepared for it. These devices like the blowout preventer and everything that we do, we thought was exactly what we needed to prevent these kind of things from happening. They were completely wrong. He's comparing this to Apollo 13. I mean, the situation there where
David,
you
let me ask you, as a reporter, do you buy that? Because I think, you know, we've seen there's been a lot. I mean, that, first of all, it shouldn't be called a blowout preventer because it's failed multiple times. It obviously has not prevented blowouts. And it seems to me that, you know, they're not spending the money on the technology for what to do when this happens. And also, I think there's a Chris, what's the name of the switch? They have it in a lot of other countries. They use it that costs money.
Yeah, but Norway has it. And Canada has it.
Sounds like they didn't spend the money on that, did they, David?
Yeah, they clearly didn't spend the money for a remote cutoff switch, which is something that's pretty much universal throughout the rest of the world in these kind of operations. They just didn't feel like they needed it here. They convinced the government regulatory agencies they didn't need it. And there's a lot of complicity here and there's a lot of explaining to do on multiple levels here.
Yeah,
I think some of the strongest questions need to start going to our regulators. Why did you allow this?
Yeah.
Why
did
you accept that argument?
Yep.
What did you know and when did you know it? You know, those
it's when you've
got to get to the bottom of it.
It's the large scale of when you decide not to spend the money on the surge protector. factor. You're like, oh, what are the chances there's going to be a... Oh, there goes all my computers. David, thank you so much for taking time for us. I hope you're checking with us again as this disaster just unfortunately unfolds there. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
All right, there he goes, David Mattingly, CNN national correspondent.
He was good.
That's why, by the way, Chris, I have carbonite. All right.
In case your surge protector goes out?
Yes.
Or in case your blowout switch goes.
Yes, my blowout preventer does not work. 21 minutes after the hour. That was smooth. 21 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's life-altering. It's soul-changing. It's the summit of all human desire.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Live from New York City, which is currently making its own gravy. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Yeah, it takes about 7 hours to get anywhere in Manhattan when it's raining, FYI. There's a little fun fact for you about New York kids. Also, he went by way of, I think, Pennsylvania. So I got to, you know, some primary fever this morning as I went through Pennsylvania to get to Manhattan.
Sounds so appealing. I'm getting yelled at by people who live in New York, by the way.
Why?
I'm getting good talking.
I know, you should. You're doing a lot of smack talk about New York, for God's sake. You started a turf war between New York and L.A. But with your, the Supreme Court's getting too New York-y and whatever.
It's getting
New York bashing. We've had enough of you.
Oh, okay. You banish me?
You are. I wish you went into a cornfield. You can't be in New York or L.A.
Oh, no.
Here's something, you know, I think I've mentioned that I have kind of a loser social life. I've managed to import that from L.A. to New York.
Yes.
Rebecca Taylor, who, by the way, is all fancy and has a new Twitter something that the kids
What's
are doing.
What's your Twitter handle, Rebecca?
Oh, I'm so excited. It's twitter.com/Rebecca, R-E-B-E-K-A-H, underscore Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R.
Aren't you something?
And I've already been followed by a Republican congresswoman.
Oh.
The therapist from Tool Academy is following me.
Oh, no.
And, most exciting, I'm being followed by Karl Rove.
Wow. They're keeping an eye on the enemy over here, huh?
Yeah, it looks like it.
I don't think so. It's just because I'm following him, and I got one of those generic things like, thanks for being my friend. Check out my Facebook page. And
tell
I was like,
Tubby.
Oh, he doesn't know me.
Give Tubby McTreason our best, won't you?
Yeah, I'll tweet him for you.
You know, if I tweeted more, Chris, I'm new at this because I'm 1,000 years old.
You tweeted twice this morning.
I might have known that the big party that Rebecca sent me the invitation to, that it's for the Center for American Progress Thursday night. I was like, why, yes, I'd love to go.
Yes,
and I've neglected to notice that it's in Washington, D.C., not New York. I didn't.
Well, that's where they're
based. So I turned down the only other thing I've been invited to in 1,000 years. I had this big event at the Apollo Theater in Harlem, which I've never been to. And I said, oh, no, I can't. I have a big party for the Center for American Press. Until I checked the thing and realized that it's not in this city. So I can't.
The Center for American Progress is kind of based in D.C. I mean.
Yes. I might have noticed that had I been a little more with it.
That invite had too many words in it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rebecca. It did. Now I will be at home drinking box wine with my dogs, as I normally am.
No point.
29 minutes after the hour. Senator Bernie Sanders next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
All the good men are either gay or have no face.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 34 minutes after the hour. Happy primary day, everybody. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. All right, turn the lights off and everybody talk quietly so Tom Hartman doesn't hear us.
Okay, shh.
Shh, everybody. It's Senator Bernie Sanders of the great state of Vermont. Good morning, Senator Sanders.
How are you, Stephanie?
I'm good, sir. Good to speak with you again.
Good to be with you.
Well, lots to talk about. I want to get to your amendment on auditing the Fed, but, you know, let's talk about this oil spill for a minute, because this is the kind of thing that you do best, is trying to expose what's happening in stuff like this. What is your take on what's going on in the Gulf thus far?
Well, first of all, the situation is likely a hell of a lot worse than BP has told us. They were talking about 5,000 barrels a day, and it may be 10 times that amount. And the kind of damage that it's going to do to ocean wildlife, the kind of damage that it's going to do to the economy of the Gulf region is literally beyond comprehension. It's hard to understand. And Stephanie, to me, the bottom line of this whole thing is very simple. If we do all of the offshore drilling that the oil industry wants, by the year 2030, do you know what kind of savings you're going to see when you buy a gallon of gas?
How much?
You know, 3 cents a gallon.
Oh.
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, by moving forward aggressively with CAFE standards, by making sure that we get better mileage per gallon from our automobiles, when we go up to 36 miles per gallon, we're going to save, within 5 years, we're going to save a dollar a gallon.
Well, you know, Senator, I'm so glad you're saying this, because I think it was Mitch McConnell I just saw on TV over the weekend. Oh, well, we're going to have to keep drilling, because unless you want gas to be $14 a barrel, or a gallon. And it is so disingenuous. I mean, the point you're making, we have 2% of the world's oil reserves. The notion we're going to affect gas prices, you know, or what's happening on the world oil supply is so disingenuous, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's very clear that what we have got to do, China right now, mandates that they get 36 miles per gallon on their automobiles. We could do the same, and we will do the same. We have passed legislation that moves us there. That's where the real savings are. And second of all, I think what this whole business tells us is that we have got to move not only to energy efficiency, but we have got to move to sustainable energy, which is sitting there right now, ready to happen. We are making some progress. We have a long way to go, though. That's solar, wind, geothermal, biomass. I've got legislation, which I'm pushing very hard, which would allow in 10 years 10 million solar rooftops in the United States. We have other solar technology called concentrated solar, which could produce 25-30% of the electricity that the American people need, being produced in the Southwest, which is a great area for solar exposure.
Senator Sanders, I hate to even take your time with this, but I don't know if you've heard in the right wing, some of our Republican friends literally blaming this on environmentalists, saying it's because we have to drill out so deep that this is happening.
No.
So their answer to this is to drill more and to drill closer in.
Well,
your,
it's totally
your thoughts.
Absurd. And I think one of the things that we also know is that BP, that technology used elsewhere in the world was available to BP. That could have prevented this disaster, could have resulted in a shutoff. Furthermore, what we also know is that workers there and people there were aware that there was something wrong, and BP kind of pushed the effort forward. So I think BP has an enormous amount of responsibility on its hands. My job and the job of other members of Congress is to make sure that it's them and the other people involved in this project pick up the tab for the damage and not the American people.
But, Senator, I guess, you know, most people's fear is, will they? I know that, you know, Transocean, of course, the, you know, headline today is they are going to give shareholders $1 billion while trying to cap their responsibility in the Gulf at $27
million. And as you know, BP has also been enormously profitable. I think they made $5 billion in the first quarter of this year. So I think it's not a very hard issue to understand. Should the American people, through no fault of their own, have to pay for the cleanup and the economic damage? And the answer obviously is not. And we're going to push legislation to make sure that it is BP, Transocean, Halliburton that pick up the cost.
Yeah, well, good. I think that's going to make a lot of people feel a little better this morning. I mean, we were just talking to a CNN reporter, and it seems like this has layers to it. This, you know, the story then today is they've chosen more toxic, less effective oil dispersant manufactured by, you know, a company with close ties to BP.
Well, let me just throw another element into it, that Transocean moved to a canton in Switzerland in order to avoid paying taxes, which is what Halliburton has done. So all of this, Stephanie, really speaks to the incredible greed and irresponsibility of the oil industry, which is not any different than the greed and irresponsibility of the large banks, which have plunged us into the recession that we're in right now. And that's what we're talking about.
Yep.
Uncontrolled corporate greed, which is doing enormous damage both economically and environmentally to our country and to the world.
Well, thank God for you. I have to say, in yet another, your one of your, fights of your life has been for transparency. So we just had a big victory, right? The Senate passed your amendment to audit the Fed, right?
We did. A year ago, I had Ben Bernanke before the he was before the Budget Committee on which I serve, and I asked him a very simple question. I said, can you tell the American people who received trillions of dollars of zero interest or near zero interest loans? And he said, no, I'm not going to tell you. But we passed an amendment that would mandate that, he tells us, by December 1st of this year. Furthermore, during this whole bailout process, you had people like Lloyd Blankfein, who's the CEO of Goldman Sachs, sitting in the room with the chairman of the Fed and other people on the Fed, arguing, among other things, that AIG should receive a bailout, $182 billion. And guess what happened? Goldman Sachs got $12 billion of direct 100 cents on the dollar payback from AIG. Now, what do you think about that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, the absurdity that you can have these things taking place behind closed doors. This amendment would give transparency and teach us, allow us to investigate these conflicts of interest, as well as doing a thorough audit of all of the emergency provisions since 2008.
Wow, and I have to say, you did something pretty, rarer than a unicorn these days. You got a 96-0 vote, a combined effort of conservative and progressive senators.
We did, and I think all over the country, I mean, ordinary people, whether they're progressive, whether they're conservative, saying, wait a second, I cannot believe that the CEOs of the largest financial institutions of the world are sitting behind closed doors with the Fed making deals that benefit them. I mean, how can this happen? We've got to have transparency on that. And once we have transparency and once we have a GAO audit, we can bring about some of the changes that we need in the Fed.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, it's interesting analogy to what's going on under the ocean right now. You know, we don't really know. And you're right. It's like until we even know what's going on with all this banking stuff, how do we fix it and prevent it from happening again?
Stephanie,
right?
That is exactly the issue. I mean, you're talking about an international financial system which is so tightly knit that we're seeing it right now. Greece has a problem. Well, why should we worry if Greece has a problem? It's too bad for Greece. Well, guess what? European banks have invested heavily in Greece. They hold Greece's debt. American banks have invested heavily in European banks. So if the European banks go down, the American banks go down, we're back to too big to fail again. Well, you know what? Somebody has got to take a hard look and see, is this the financial system that works for the middle class of the United States? Or is this something designed just for the wealthiest, the most powerful people in the world? And I think, you know, it's time to, among other things, start breaking up these large financial institutions which have grown enormously since we deregulated them. You've got, if you can believe this, I mean, this is a point not often made, you've got the top four banks in this country who have grown enormously that now have assets of over 50% of the GDP of the United States of America. What do you think about that? Four financial institutions. They issue two-thirds of the credit cards in this country, half of the mortgages in this country. Now, to me, not only from a too-big-to-fail perspective, i.e., that if one of these guys starts teetering again, you are going to bail them out because they take down half the economy with them, but also from an economic perspective. Do you think that that is a vigorous, competitive society when you have four financial institutions issuing two-thirds of the credit cards in America and all of that economic power, spending huge amounts of money and lobbying, campaign contributions? That's a real problem, and I think we are beginning, just beginning. This bill is a small step forward. But we got a long way to go to start exposing these guys. And what's the end result? What do we want? We want, I think, a financial institution which is not segregated, living in its own world, becoming a gambling casino, but a financial institution which provides credit to small and medium-sized businesses in the productive economy so we can produce real products and create real jobs. I know that that is a revolutionary, radical idea, but
well, I mean, that's the thing. With all this, you know, you hear about whether it's the tea parties or whatever, we want smaller government, and it's like, really? You really want these banks and oil companies, insurance companies to just run roughshod over the American people?
Exactly.
You know, and I think we're finding that they don't.
Well, I think, you know, I think a lot of these Tea Party people are often, you know, working people who have seen their, like the middle class in America. They've seen their incomes go down. They're in precarious financial position, and they're lashing out at the wrong people. They're lashing out at the wrong people. So instead of worrying about immigrants, maybe they should worry about the Bank of America and the power of the Bank of America.
Senator Sanders, before you go, obviously it is primary day, and we've obviously brought up the Tea Party. What do you think's going to happen? It's interesting. I mean, I've made this in Pennsylvania, for instance. I've made this argument that I think people, you know, if you look at the polling, people actually wanted a much more progressive health care plan than we ended up getting.
You're right.
You know, it's this meme that we're moving to the right, I think, is mistaken.
I think one of the reasons that the Democrats have been faltering, although I'm seeing a little bit of an uptick lately, is they have not said clearly, we are on the side of the middle class. We're going to take the insurance companies on, really. We're going to give you a public option. We're going to take the drug companies on. We are really going to take on Wall Street and start breaking up these big banks. I don't think that message, you know, Democrats do better than the Republicans, but it becomes a very blurred message. So I think you're right. I think a progressive message speaking to working people is what we need.
Yep, absolutely. Senator Bernie Sanders of the great state of Vermont, thank you so much as always, Senator. We love having you.
Good to be with you, Stephanie. Thank you.
All right, there you go. Senator Bernie Sanders, if only we had 100 of him.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yes. A few less Arlen Specters and Blanche Lincolns, for my taste. A few more Bernie Sanders. All right.
A few less Mitch McConnells, too. How about that?
Every time I listen to him, I'm like, that's socialism? Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. 46 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Side effects may include loss of clothing, rug burn, shortness of breath, and sore abdominals the next morning. What in the world is up?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 50 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Joe in Spokane, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Joe.
Good morning. There's a little phrase going around in the media, and it's from BP, that they will pay all legitimate claims. And let me tell you how that works. You have lost your fishing business, and you file a claim. Guess what? They got lawyers that fight your claim. Mm-hmm. And let's suppose 6 years go by, and finally a court says, yeah, they got to pay your claim, but you still get no money because they appeal it to a higher court. It takes a couple more years, and if you're lucky enough to actually still be alive or have the money to fight their lawyers, the higher court says, nah, they don't have to pay. Or the higher court might say, yeah, they got to pay, but only 10 cents on the dollar.
Well, let's hope that people like Senator Sanders are going to, you know, ensure that doesn't happen. But I hear you. You know, I mean, look, these 11 guys that were killed, by the way, that nobody talks about, nobody's been compensated for that tragedy. Their families, nothing. None of the fishermen have been compensated yet. So, I hear you.
Do you remember what happened to the Exxon Valdez? They had to pay $14 billion. It went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, nah, they only got to pay $500 million, which was hardly anything, and many of the people that filed claims had died, and they paid nothing. So, believe me, they're going to pay all legitimate claims.
I hear you. By the way, Chris, I've never gotten a thumbs up from you on Skype before. I normally get a different finger. But every once in a while, I'll pull something out of my ass, don't I? You like that analogy I made to Senator Sanders.
You sounded very smart there.
Yes, about not exactly, not knowing what's going on in the ocean or at the Fed,
exactly.
With the big banks.
You sounded like you knew what you were talking about.
How about that analogy? Hello.
Wow. I have
transparency.
I have never given you the finger over Skype. I've given you many thumbs up, but I've never given you the finger. You've given me the finger.
I got Skype applause there. I was like, oh, thank you. Yeah, but there is a theme. I mean, look at, you know, this, by the way, did you see the 60 Minutes story?
I think
Rachel Maddow played a clip, but, you know, what is the theme? Reminds me of the mining disaster And, you know, it's like these things are not, oh, it's just an accident. It's an act of God. It's a,
whatever.
No, it's not. It is corporations that put profit first and say, you know, worker safety second, among other things. I mean, it's, you know, that's the thing. There were many things that Massey Energy could have done. What's coming out so far, at least on 60 Minutes, I mean, that's what this guy was telling the story, that there was a huge argument between the Transocean guy and the BP guy on this rig right before this happened. And again, you know, the whole technical thing above my pay grade, but it was whatever the hell they were doing. I mean, the thing that's supposed to detect this happening was already broken, so it wasn't giving accurate measurements. And they knew that. That right there is, you talk about gross negligence,
yeah,
but then basically BP won the argument because they're paying the bills, and the, you know, the decision was to get the oil out faster and to do something a certain way that resulted in this. So, you know, if that's not going to end up in liability, I don't know what should. David in Washington State, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hey,
hello, David.
Love you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, as I was listening to the interview, I just was hit with this idea. Maybe you could run with it, because nobody's talking about it, that we've got to stop pretending that corporations are sustainable. They're not. They're completely unsustainable. I mean, look at the banks. We have to bail them out by the taxpayers, and the every level of the corporate industrial complex is unsustainable, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that you know, this last caller that was talking about what happened with Exxon Valdez when it got to the Supreme Court, this is what disturbs me, David. I mean, look at how corporate friendly they already are. Look at the Citizens United
Supreme
decision.
Court,
and
exactly.
And you're right, David. Is this going to go all the way there? And it's the same thing. You know, you've got a majority.
Yeah, we're going to keep pretending, and you know, a lot of aspects of the mainstream media are either trying to manipulate, you know, our perceptions, not you and I,
right,
and the moots, but...
Right. We're unmanipulatable.
Yeah, the gullible teabaggers, you know, that just want to be spoon-fed and handed the information so they don't have to, you know, read.
Right. But, David, you know, in some ways, how can you have any clearer an illustration of this than this mining disaster and this oil spill?
Bingo.
To go, we are not against capitalism. We are not against companies making money fairly. We are against companies that cut corners, including worker safety, including environmental protection, for profits.
I know we have to stop this. This is something's coming down the pike that's going to just rip this whole veneer off of all this crap we've had to deal with, that our planet's had to endure. You know, just all this poverty, just everything, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, David, you know, that's why in some ways on the right there were these crazy conspiracy theories that, oh, well, yeah, like this is so that we won't have to drill. It's like, you know, yeah, President Obama's Aquaman. I mean, it literally, because what they're saying is true, that you couldn't have a better visual illustration of the results of no regulation, right?
Crystal clear for these Republicans like Mitch McConnell and Haley Barbour, you know, making outlandish statements, you know, like, oh yeah, it's just a drop in the bucket, you know, in the ocean. Don't worry about it. Yeah,
yes.
Wash your face in the Gulf, you know.
That's right. Yeah, as Jim Ward said yesterday, Chris, that's their new slogan. Mm-hmm. Come Mississippi, come fishing. They're hardly putting up a fight anymore.
Go hit a few tar balls around on the beach.
Yes, you can hit one in the head with a tar ball and take it home. And
mm-hmm. Did you see this morning that they've counted 20 tar balls washing up on Key West now? Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Can Rush Limbaugh see them from his veranda where he drinks adult beverages with Clarence Thomas, or
not
no?
Not yet. He's a little far away from Key West, but they're headed his way.
I mean, seriously, what more graphic a visual illustration do we need? Have you seen on TV? You're just like... Ew.
Yeah.
I mean, ew. It's and like you said, that's even only what we can see.
Right.
I mean,
there's so much more underneath this. Who? Okay, breaking news. Oil doesn't necessarily float. Who?
Yeah.
Who knew? Wow.
Yeah. All right. Kim in San Francisco, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Kim.
Wasn't that an awesome show on 60 Minutes? That just, I mean, it was striking, and this guy was very credible and very real, and it was easy to empathize with him. And
this is like a disaster movie. It's, you know what I mean?
It's a tragedy. It's literally like a Shakespearean tragedy. What is going to happen? What has happened? And it needs to be addressed. And the one thing I realized, humans are not important to Wall Street, and profit is greed in this country. And we're individuals are responsible too, but when it's with corporations, it is insatiable. It is endless.
Yep, absolutely. Wall Street 2 is out just in time. Mm-hmm. 58 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere, stephaniemiller.com, the website. Check it out. You can email us all there, executive producer Chris Lavoie, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. Lots going on today. We have Charlie Pierce coming up from the Boston Globe, author, humorist extraordinaire. But first, one of our personal favorites, homegirl, Representative Linda Sanchez of the great state of California. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Good morning, Steph. How are you?
I'm good. How have you been?
I've been great, although we're experiencing torrential rainfall here in Washington, D.C.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I'm up in New York. Me too.
I need California sunshine. I'm going through withdrawal.
I hear you. I can't. You know, by the way, someone just told me. So we bought you a baby gift, and your son is 1 year old already.
He turned one last week. I can't believe it has flown. He's walking.
Wow.
The kid is just a bundle of energy.
Wow. I was talking to a friend here in New York that's like, my son just graduated from college. And I'm like, well, congratulations to him and to us for being like 1,000 years old now. Last time I lived here, he was, you know, came up to my knees. So it goes fast.
It does go really fast. They say, you know, you're going to blink and the next thing you know, he's going to ask for the car keys and you'll blink again. And I'll be off to college.
it's so cats in the cradle. Now, Congresswoman, so much to talk about. You know, obviously the Arizona.
Lay it on me, Steph.
All right, baby. Here we go. I was heartened to see. You probably saw this poll yesterday, because you know I was disturbed, probably as you were, that you know showing support for this Arizona immigration law, which probably is unconstitutional. Let's start with that. But they just did another poll that showed what I think you and I both know is that people what they want is comprehensive immigration reform.
That's absolutely right. You know, they came out with this poll that said, oh, you know, majority of Americans support the Arizona law. I don't believe that for a second because poll after poll after poll shows, and then I don't care what ideological stripe you come in, majority of Americans, vast majority of Americans support comprehensive immigration reform. And, you know, it's all in the way that people ask these questions in the poll because I bet if you ask people, you know, if you were jogging and you forgot your ID at home and, you know, police picked you up and you couldn't prove your citizenship and they took you down to the station and detained you for 2 hours, you know, would you support this law? They always think about it in terms of other people but not how it might impact them personally. So I think I think that poll is just, it's crap, pardon my French. I think the real issue here is, yeah, a majority of Americans support comprehensive immigration reform. They're crying out for it.
Right.
Racial profiling isn't the answer. You know, this Arizona law is like a Jim Crow kind of law. It's really ugly, mean-spirited. It's just not the way we should be going, but we cannot get immigration reform passed with Republicans dragging their feet or creating obstacles for it.
Well, I think that, you know, what people recognize is that you can't just take one little piece and put all of the blame, you know, on one particular piece of this. I think we all know that, you know, people are saying, oh, it's people are reacting to the border being broken. Well, I think that's true. The border, we do need to secure our border, but I think that there are so many pieces of it, including employers, including giving people a path to citizenship.
Let me just talk about the broken borders thing for a second. Yeah, there's a problem because there is a criminal element at the border, but it's not the vast majority of people that come through the border. The vast majority of people want to be reunited with their families. They want to work. They want a chance to, you know, to achieve some degree of economic security. And if we had an orderly immigration system that made sense, that didn't make people wait decades to get their immigration status, you know, cleared, then we could separate those people out from the criminal element, which is what we all want to be, you know, our Border Patrol and our law enforcement to be focused on. But so long as, you know, you create this, you know, system that's so inefficient, that's so burdensome, so expensive, and has such backlogs, people get, you know, they get desperate to reunite with their families, and they're going to come, you know, the non-legal way. And if we had comprehensive immigration reform that could separate, you know, these legitimate, you know, people out from the criminal element, it would be much better for our national security.
Congresswoman Sanchez, you've seen a lot of political ads in your day. The John McCain finished the dang fence, the most pathetic ever in your...
Comes pretty close. I mean, John McCain is just emblematic of the problem. Here is a man who in 2007 sat down with Senator Kennedy and wrote an immigration reform bill. And now, because he's running for re-election and he's running scared, is saying that he supports the Arizona law and, oh, let's finish the fence. And he's the perfect example of what's wrong. He's
yep.
putting his own personal needs ahead of what is the good of the country. And,
yep.
you know, it's just pathetic. It's really, really disheartening.
You would never think that you'd think that you'd want that crazy J.D. Hayworth in the Congress, would you?
I served with him in the House. That guy is nuts. He's completely nuts.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, I don't know, you know, where their farm team in or why their bench is not deep, but, I mean, the fact that he's running and has a shot really frightens me.
What do you think of Sarah Palin has just been out there cheerleading for this Arizona law. She said we're all Arizonans now and, you know, called on other states to follow the lead, praised Jan Brewer for signing the law. In an unfortunate analogy, said Arizona's ground zero for border security issues. Where does this come from?
You know, it's thinly veiled racism, and I'm just going to call a spade a spade. You know, it's whipping people up into a frenzy by making them afraid of something or someone. If they can't, you know, peg something on terrorists, then they, you know, they're going to peg it all on immigrants. And it's just a way for her to appeal to the worst part of, you know, human nature, which is, you know, fear of people who are different. And it's unforgivable. It's not American. America is quintessentially a country of immigrants, and each wave of
right.
immigration has helped build this country and made it stronger and better.
The thing that doesn't pass the laugh test is she has before, Sarah Palin, denied the law would lead to racial profiling. To me, the law consists wholly of social, of racial profiling. What else is it? This
yeah,
law,
I
if it's
would,
not
I
racial
love,
profiling.
If, you know, if I could, I would love to sit down, Ms. Palin, and ask her, what does an American citizen look like? And if she could
yeah.
give me an accurate description of what a citizen looks like versus a non-citizen versus, you know, a legal permanent resident, for example,
yeah.
or somebody who's here on a work visa, you know, I'd love for her to be able to describe that because
well,
there is
she,
no,
she went
you know, typical profile, which means
right.
you look at people who look different or look other or look poor or look dark-skinned or look whatever, some of whom have been living in this country for generations longer than Sarah Palin's family ever had.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well,
she went hassling them.
Congresswoman, she went so far as to say of the new powers granted to police officers, I think for most American people the reaction will be, why aren't the police already doing that?
Yeah,
I mean,
because, you know, police's job is to protect us from criminal element, not to hassle people over their papers. Otherwise, we'd be, you know, the Soviet Union, which is, you know,
yeah.
you had to carry your papers around in your pocket and you know, show who you were everywhere you went. I mean, these are the same people. Interestingly enough, Sarah Palin, who seems to be somewhat of a darling of the Tea Partiers. You know, the Tea Partiers are all about, you know, liberty and keeping government out of stuff. And yet, you know, they're perfectly fine with, you know, having to have people walk around with documentation in their pockets, so long as it's not them, so long as it's not white people that have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah, please. They're you know, it's, we don't want big government. And then the oil spill, where's the government? Well, how come the government's
exactly.
not regulating him? Yeah.
And apparently now they're blaming the oil spill on the environmentalists because, you know, they're
yes.
the ones that were there drilling for oil in the first place.
It's yes.
ridiculous. They turn every single argument on its head and, you know, come up with this, you know, fake, you know, reasoning right. and facts to support their argument. Completely ridiculous. Completely.
Congresswoman Sanchez, you bring up the Tea Party. It is primary day. And, you know, it's interesting. We talked about this new poll on immigrant. People want, you know, when you explain it to them, they really want comprehensive immigration reform. Same thing on health care. You know, it shows
Absolutely.
That, you know, people are like, oh, well, we're not really for that. And then when you see all of these things that are in it, people are for them, and they're starting to kick in. What do you think? What's your prediction on 2010? I mean, you know, I don't know that it's going to be as bad, as dire as they're predicting for Democrats.
Well, one thing, Republicans are running around crowing that they're going to take back the House. And, you know, I think that's going to be virtually impossible because they'd really have to run the table in order to do that. But they're promising, like, they're going to win 80 seats, which I don't know what they're smoking, but, you know, I'd like to get my hands on it. But the fact of the matter is, and this is what I find really interesting, people were sold health care, the evils of health care, before they even had a chance to figure out what was in it. And when I go back and I talk with constituents and they hear what's in the bill, they're like, well, that's good stuff. I'm like, well, the bill is a good bill. But they were told it was bad. They start to believe it was bad before they even had a chance to even know what was in the bill. And I think once people realize, you know, the ground isn't going to open up and swallow everybody because health care reform passed, and, oh, my gosh, this will actually help me, you know, I think a lot of that anger is going to subside, and I think people are going to recognize, hey,
well,
this is a good thing, and the people who passed
you must have some frustration like I do. This new poll shows 63% are more likely to support a bill that guarantees people won't get dropped for pre-existing conditions. Like, well, we're like, that's the bill. That's what we've been saying.
Yeah,
you know, but
they didn't like the bill, but they like the individual parts of what's in the bill.
Well, I mean, but these are going to be start kicking in June 15th. The Medicare donut hole ends, right? We've got July 1st. The high risk insurance pools designed to help people with pre-existing conditions are scheduled to open, right?
And some insurance companies are already allowing people with, you know, kids that are 26 years, you know, to keep coverage for their, you know, their dependents until they're 26 years old. So, you know, I think good things, you know, will come. And I think, you know, once people realize, again, that it's a benefit to them and that, you know, the ceiling isn't going to crash in on them, they're going to realize it's a great bill.
And the Republicans will take responsibility for it. Once
and then
they'll
claim that they were always for that.
Exactly, because that's how they do it. And they really think that voters have a short memory. You know, they're trying to blame, like, you know, the economics on this administration. They forget what things were like under Bush and how he botched the economy and how much the economy has improved since Obama's been in office. So, if we continue to, you know, point that out to voters, I think they're going to make the right decisions.
Quickly, Congresswoman Sanchez, before you go, your take on the, because you're a chick lawyer, on the Elena Kagan.
Dude, I'm such a chick lawyer, and I think she's brilliant, and she's also very practical, which are, you know, not words that you ever usually ascribe to Supreme Court nominees. But she knows how the real world works, and I think she's going to be great.
Yep. Thank God you had a kid already, because you know. It is amazing the double standard with women, isn't it? I mean, you know, they get to a certain level.
It's so unfair because, you know, back in 1990 when Justice David Souter was confirmed, he was a bachelor, and nobody ever mentioned that or wondered about his sexual orientation. But, you know, here we have Elena Kagan, who's 50, single, and has a short haircut and likes to play softball. Oh, my God, yeah, she's definitely gay. I mean, it's so ridiculous. And it doesn't matter because essentially what you want to look for is somebody who's intelligent, who has a lot of experience with the law. And for me, fundamentally, something that I think is most important, practical experience about how does the law and decisions that are rendered in the law, how do they affect regular Americans?
You know, let me speak as the single childless loser. There's a lot of ways to get here. mostly have to do with personality defects. But
I'm going to say that there's one way to get there, and that's called men.
Representative Linda Sanchez of the great state of California. Thanks as always. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks again, Steffi.
There she goes. Representative Linda Sanchez.
Hooray. Sanchez. That name don't sound American. I think I'm going to say her papers.
Yeah, she better stay away from Arizona.
She might be one of them Navajos or Hopis. Send them back where they come from. Them reddish brown people. What? Oh, crap.
This has been sarcastic comedy supplied by Jim Ward.
Yes.
19 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
That's the smartest thing I've ever heard anyone say about anything.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
You did. You said ooh.
Dimitri writes, hey, baby, you know you don't have to stay a childless loser forever. Next time you're in L.A., why don't we get together and make a couple of bad decisions? Oh, please. My life is one long string of them. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number toll-free from anywhere. Oh, I was mentioning I hung out with my friend and her 3- and 6-year-old
yes.
over the weekend, and I did notice one thing, that raising children apparently involves a lot of hard liquor. She asked for a margarita the second she got in my... I was like, I don't have a... And then our friend Amy that has 6 kids, she asked for vodka the second I opened the door. And I was like, I don't, I'm a wino, as you know. That's the difference between me, Rachel Maddow, mixologist, me. I don't have it, don't drink it, don't know how to make it.
Maybe a wine spritzer. That's about the only you
always,
you do.
You always seem to have one stray beer in the back of the refrigerator every
yes,
time.
Yes, that's in case
that.
You come over. Yes. Yeah. Angela in Minneapolis writes, I'm a long-time listener early this day. Since I subscribe to the podcast, $4.95 a month if you buy a year in advance. Gling. You don't need to write the gling out. I'll do it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's see. You are so right about the alcohol it takes to raise kids. I'm drinking right now. let's see. Blah, blah, blah. Angela in Minneapolis. Listening to the Stephcast after the kid was, she just put the kid to bed.
Aw. Oh.
Here's something else I found out about kids. Sand, you know, in I don't know where you live, but in New York City, a lot of the, what do you call it, the playgrounds.
Playgrounds, what are they called?
Yeah, those bark parks for kids.
Exactly, I forget what they are.
Yeah.
Playgrounds. They have sand in them.
Yep.
It's like kid crack. I don't know what it is with kids and sand.
Well, kids
love the sand.
Yeah, kids are sand magnets. They sand sticks to them, and it only comes off them when they get home.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was the only time that they shut up and left us alone is when we found a playground with sand. And she's like, oh, okay, they'll be fine now. All right.
You didn't have to deal with the cleaning up of the sand, though, because you left and you started drinking.
No, that's the good thing about kids is then they go home. I'm like, okay, bye-bye. Barry in New York, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hi, Stephanie. I hope you were able to find Hal Sparks the other day at the AIDS walk. My wife and I walked by you as you were walking through the park with your dogs. Didn't recognize you, but the dogs stood out like crazy.
Yeah. Yes. yes, I did find him.
Great. Listen, I just want to scream. I can't believe I agree with Sarah Palin on something. When she calls the media the lamestream media.
Yeah.
Whoa. Haley Barbara talks and nobody smacks him down about it. It's just like nonsense.
That would appear partisan to actually rebut something somebody says.
Yeah.
So we can't do that.
Yes, to rebut that perhaps the fishing is not a good idea right now.
Right.
In Mississippi, you would hate to bring that up. Okay. Justin in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hello. Yeah. Oh, I didn't do it right.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Hello, Justin.
How you doing? I just wanted to make a suggestion to your listeners. Something I've been doing is basically not buying my gas from BP and just moving on to the next gas station and waiting to see how they handle the whole situation before I decide to purchase any of their product anymore.
Mm. That'll stay.
Well,
there's a lot of BP, you know, in the Midwest and the East Coast, but it's called ARCO here on the West Coast.
Hmm. Yep. Jim, I have a guest call for you.
Oh.
This is related.
Oh, boy.
The United States only has 2% of the world's oil reserves, and so the notion that we're going to affect gasoline prices or affect what we're going to do in the future as a world oil supply, we're not. And so I think when you take into consideration the catastrophe and the economic damage that could reach $14 billion, you have to say to yourself, it's time to start migrating off oil and onto other sources of energy. Who said that?
That'd be Richard B. Cheney.
No, that was a really bad guess. That was Senator Maria Cantwell the other night on the Meadow Show.
What can't she do well?
Exactly my point. Okay, let's go to Tim in Madison real quick. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. You know, we have someone running against Russ Feingold. I just threw his hat in the ring because he watches Fox News every day. And toe sucker Dick Morris said, if you're a rich white Republican in Wisconsin, you could take Russ Feingold. The rich white Republican who makes medical supplies said, you know what? Dick Morris, I felt like he was talking to me because I'm a white Republican, and I am I believe in the Tea Bag Party because, you know what? The Tea Party because we need to get rid of immigrants. We need to go ahead.
Good luck to you. Right back with Charlie Pierce on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
She knows every dirty joke ever written.
In fact, she's in some of them.
Yes.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 34 minutes after the hour. Why, it's Tuesday, everybody. There's only one man now that understands. And that's the author of Idiot America. Pierce. Charlie Pierce, the funniest writer in the world, from the Boston Globe.
Why is everybody always laughing with me?
Well, my brother Charlie sure looked out for me a little bit.
Good morning, Charlie Pierce.
Shrimp in 30 weight. Yummy.
Guess what? I had lunch with your book agent the other day.
Oh, you did?
Am I writing an expose on Charlie Pierce? Maybe.
Oh, man, that's terrific. Another member of the empire.
Okay, there you go. So, you, speaking of your empire, why, you're at Esquire.com with a new political blog.
There's a group political blog there that just started up that people should check out. It's me and a guy named Johnny H. Richardson, Tim Heffernan, Tom Juneau. The usual gang of Esquire idiots are on there blogging about politics, so we're having a little fun with it.
And
we
have a link to it right up there at StephanieMiller.com.
Thank you, guys.
Yes.
Aren't we something?
This is what we call synergy on many, producing content on many platforms.
That's right.
I was
I'm now going to take a melon baller and take out my eyes. Thank you very much for saying that.
I love your first blog. I went to Esquire.com because you write things like the kind of speech that scares the martinis out of FDR. love that line.
The Huey Long Standard Oil thing. Yeah, went back. It's actually it's called the Share the Wealth speech, but it's a very famous one. But he whacked around the oil companies. Of course, now we have Mary Landrieu, you know, parking cars for the oil company now.
Right. Well, let me read that part of your blog, because I love that as well. As the deep horizon blowout gradually turns the Gulf of Mexico and perhaps eventually the Gulf of Maine into a Jiffy Lube, we have Senator Mary Landrieu doing all she can to stick up for BP, despite mounting evidence the company's safety precautions were designed by ferrets and that its attempts to stem the god-awfulness are being drawn from the playbook of Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah,
except the latest one seems to be working a little, right? They're siphoning a little
sort of
oil.
They're getting about 1/5 of it. Yeah.
Is that like being a little bit pregnant? It's working a little bit.
I'm sure. And of course, we're seeing tar balls washing up in Florida now, not far from Rush Limbaugh's house, which, you know, tar balls on his beach is rather redundant when you come right down to it. But, you know, enough about this silliness. How about that Mark Souter, huh? What a guy.
But who's Mark Souter?
Mark
Souter
is the Indiana he's an Indiana representative,
yes.
Steffi, who is very big in abstinence education and is resigning today because of a, quote, improper affair with a staffer.
Yep, the news just broke this morning.
He, quote, I sinned against my God, my wife, and my family by having a mutual relationship with a part-time member of my staff. Please don't use the words member or staff.
Yeah.
In your statement.
Was it a
Have someone vet that for you.
Was it a dead girl or a live boy?
No, this was a live girl, apparently.
Oh, okay.
God.
Hey, don't knock that dead girl, live boy thing. In Massachusetts here, we've had people who've been caught with both of them and reelected them anyway. So.
Well, you know, I don't know if you read Frank Rich's piece last week, but, you know, about the George Wreckers thing. I mean, as much hilarity as there is in this right-wing hypocrisy, it's also really sad. I mean, this guy, you know, has been behind some of this, you know, the most hurtful and, you know, anti-gay laws and God knows what all therapy for years in this country.
I think we would all be very healthy if most of these people kept their self-loathing, you know, at home with the shades drawn.
Right.
Oh my God!
This is just appalling. So anyway.
There's a story I'll get to later, but about, you know, he did this reparative therapy for kids that he did for years, and there's a whole story about one of them. Oh, which, by the way, apparently spanking the gay out of you, that can work in his opinion.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
But anyway, you know, this is like...
I never got past the long stroke, to be perfectly honest.
Here, hold it right there. We're going to need to practice that for a while now. But anyway, this kid attempted suicide eventually. This, you know, one of the kids that, you know, is mentioned in this thing, which is, you know, obviously one of the many, many dangers of this horrible reparative therapy theory in itself. But anyway. So, Charlie, what... now, it's primary day, for God's sakes.
It is. In several interesting places.
What do you think is going to happen in Pennsylvania?
Well,
it's close. I heard SESTAC was only up by one now in the latest poll.
That one's going to go a long time tonight, and I think about midway through it, there will have to take Roland Spector in for carbon-14 dating.
Yes. Yeah, you hear him speak, and he just sounds old and worn out.
I mean, well, not just that, but I mean, it's very hard to keep making the argument, of course I'd change parties so I'd win. What are you, stupid?
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I think it was the creepy way that he pronounced reacted. This is just unfortunate.
And of course, Chris has been campaigning against him ever since the Warren Commission closed up shop.
No, that'd be Joe.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. And we also have Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas. What's going to happen in that one?
I don't know. It looks like she's going to win, doesn't it?
I think so.
It looks like she's picked up a little momentum in the last couple of weeks. And that's a tough state. I mean, she's exactly the kind of Democrat they elect in that state, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I don't know that she's going to make it past the general election.
No, I think that is very doubtful. But look, I mean, the crazy train is really pulling in Kentucky, though.
That's
Rand
Paul.
To keep an eye on.
When
a white Republican named Trey can't get elected in a primary, something's
happening. That has Yertle the Turtle's endorsement. This is sort of all about Mitch McConnell, isn't it?
It's partly about Mitch McConnell, but it's a lot about Ron Paul too. It's a lot about the last. You know, I mean, Ron Paul got a lot of people believing in him the last time around, who didn't look past, you know, the fact that he was against the war and to his fiscal and social policies, which would have been retrograde in like 1890. But this will be an interesting one. It's going to be very hard for the Republicans to spin their way out of the fact that the crazy people are running things if Rand Paul manages to win this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, and of course, you know, Mitch McConnell's saying it has nothing to do with him, but I mean, he's in the other guy's commercials, right?
Of course it has something to do with you. You're the leader of you're the leader of your party in the Senate. And if you endorse somebody and he doesn't win, it has a lot to do with you.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of the oil spill, one of my other favorite lines in your Esquire blog is your own position on liability limits is you're probably willing not to insist on leg irons when we haul them away to Leavenworth.
No, I think they can walk under their own power, you know, through the gates. I don't care. I don't particularly don't want to see them again. But I don't understand, and this is what I tried to say in that thing. I don't understand why the continued existence of this company is a priority in any way. These guys are really bad at being an oil company. You know how I know? They ruined the Gulf of Mexico. That makes you bad at being an oil company.
Yeah.
So why should
they
survive? Why should that even be a consideration?
Well, I mean, plus, I don't know if you saw the 60 Minutes piece, but I mean, it seems pretty clear, you know, that this was it was like Massey Energy. It was a direct order to get oil out faster that led to this.
And I think that, you know, to think that, you know, the truly scary thing are all those polls are saying that we still have to drill. This makes me feel we should drill more, not less. Somebody should write a book sometime, I swear to God.
Wow.
But anyway.
Heard the right wing. You've heard, you know, we're going to be doing Right Wing World coming up next. But, I mean, literally they're saying it's environmentalist fault because that's why we have to drill out so far. Like the solution to this is to drill more and to drill in closer.
They've abandoned the notion that like a special SWAT team from Greenpeace went down there in scuba gear and blew up the pipeline. Now they're saying they have to drill out that far. Oh, that's right, because I want that closer to shore.
Oh,
that,
actually, give Charlie Cut 12 for the heck of it. We'll give you a little preview of the Right Wing World,
like
Charlie.
It.
This is actually Rush Limbaugh. Funny you should mention that.
When do we ask the Sierra Club to pick up the tab for this leak?
Huh?
The Greeniacs have been driving our oil producers off the land from offshore to way offshore to way, way, way out there offshore. From low risk to high risk to higher risk. We are now forced to drill 1 mile under sea. That's 5,000 feet.
Yes, where the oil
that's
is.
Where the oil is, you moron.
And that, yeah. This is why you failed at everything except what you're doing now, Rush. Oil companies drill where the oil
yes.
is. They want to drill there. They don't care. They're not forced to do that.
Oh, Greenpeace didn't like it. Well, I guess
are
you
saying
move,
these
then.
Sierra Club shouldn't use their $1 billion profits to pay?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that, you know, the Sierra. You know what you're going to do if you charge the Sierra Club? You're going to get a bunch of like lint covered hard candy. A couple of nickels and a ticket stub from Al Gore's movie 3 years ago. That's what you're going to get out of the Sierra Club. They're going to empty their pockets.
Yes, as you, I believe, as you said about the original conspiracy theory, yes, Greenpeace at the nuclear attack submarine fleet they have at their disposal clearly caused this, yes.
But it was too bad they didn't have it when the French blew them up. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah, this is turning folks, and this is making folks turn just amazing handsprings.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you know, and it seems to me that it should be the one unambiguous example that you just can't let industry self-regulate.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
won't do it. I mean, let them self-regulate and they won't self-regulate. Let them maintain their own safety standards and they won't maintain them.
Yeah, well, I think you've heard this. Well, you know, we've made the analogy that the dispersant is sort of like that Parmesan cheese smelling stuff powder that you know the janitor would throw on kid barf in your classroom. Like, it may be worse. And now that's the latest thing to come out, is that the dispersant they're using is more toxic and less effective than a lot of other ones. But of course,
I think the fundamental problem is they didn't have any idea what to do if this thing blew.
Yep.
They don't have a plan. They really don't. They have a bunch of experimental theories that they're trying on the fly because that's the best they have.
They really had
no idea what to do.
Yeah.
It's not like we're Norway or Brazil.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. You know, this stuff may turn out to be goof-off or something. I'm not really sure what it is, the stuff that they're spraying on it. But, there's... Yeah, I mean, scientists are saying it could be worse. I mean, not only dispersed oil, but the stuff itself is going to impact mammal, sea life, and maybe humans for God knows how long.
Well, and not just that, the psychological damage is overwhelming. I mean, are you going to eat shrimp from the Gulf? No matter what these people tell you how safe this stuff is, they're putting chemicals in the water to dissolve the oil.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was a dead zone in the Gulf 20 years ago.
This doesn't send me to Long John Silver's for, you know, the Friday special. It really doesn't.
For Shrimp Fest.
All the shrimp you can eat. Oh, wow.
You know what,
no.
Jim, I saw that on TV last night.
It's got two heads. Let's eat this one.
You know, I saw that on TV last night, the dead zones that already exist there.
And they're 20 years ago. 30 years ago. Yeah.
It reminds me, you remember my eighth grade science fair project story, right, Jim? I made shrimp. Remember how you could get a shrimp hatchery, and then the light bulb went out the night before the science fair, and I just stirred them up when
you
the judges walked by.
A dead zone. Yeah.
Yes, I had a dead zone, but I stirred them so it looked like they were swimming so I wouldn't get flunked from the science fair.
Did
it work?
Sort of.
Really?
But that's what VP is doing. That's all I'm saying. It's like, oh, it's not so bad. Look, they're moving.
Sister Margaret Moron was really on her game that day, wasn't she? Look over there, sister. Oh, look, it's moving. See?
Charlie Pierce in Boston.
It's a parrot sketch. I'm telling you, you got to get on this Mark Suter thing. It's too much fun. On his website, he says, I am committed to preserving the traditional marriage, the union of one man and one woman.
Well, he didn't mean
really.
This.
Yes. Well, not just one at a time.
Charlie Pierce of the Boston Globe and now Esquire.com.
Thank you.
See you next
Bye-bye.
Tuesday. Bye-bye now.
Oh.
I said the thing that sounds dirty that people are going to make fun of me now is next Tuesday.
He said a bad word or bad acronym.
All right. 46 minutes after the hour, back with Right Wing World next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Wow, how does the show stay so fresh?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Yeah, that's me. I am the diva.
Diva!
You better roll out the red carpet.
Diva!
Cause here I come.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show.
What? Could we have a gayer drop?
Yes, there are gayer ones.
It's a sad thing. Yes, there are.
Well, yeah.
51 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Oh, that reminds me. Here is a yes.
Mm-hmm. Right-wing hypocrite.
Guess the quote for you, Jim. Who said, hint is, we heard about this from Charlie Pierce, who said, I think that Congress must fight to uphold the traditional values that undergird the strength of our nation. The family plays a fundamental role in our society. Studies consistently demonstrate it's best for a child to have a mother and a father, and I'm committed to preserving traditional marriage, the union of one man and one woman. I'm committed to fighting the assault on American values. Who said that?
Richard Simmons.
Oh. No?
That was Representative Mark Souter, Republican of Indiana.
Oh, that guy. Who's resigning today.
He is after an affair with a female staffer.
One woman and one man at a time. It's, you know, just not.
Yeah. He was elected as a family values conservative, part of the Republican Revolution in 1994. Voted for Bill Clinton's impeachment, of course.
Because, of course he did. Yes, because of his immoral behavior. You know, it's not the act itself. It's the hypocrisy.
Yes.
Chickens are coming home to roost.
Yes. We will give you more of the disgusting George Wreckers details just a moment, speaking of that. But, speaking of which, did you see the latest Governor Tim Pawlenty? Says gays should not have the power to decide what to do with the body of a deceased partner.
Oh, what? Really?
Yes. If you're a gay man or woman in Minnesota, a state that doesn't recognize marriage equality, you won't have the option, thanks to Governor Tim Pawlenty. Explaining his veto, he said there's no actual need to give same-sex couples the equal end of life
rights. So who gets to decide then?
What if something happens to his wife? What if the state decides what to do with his wife?
Well,
here's what
different.
It is. How can any fair-minded person say this is equal rights?
I'm not
a lawyer. But
he's not interested in equal rights.
Currently, a person by executing a will can designate who shall be empowered. The bill therefore addresses a non-existent problem, is what he says. I oppose efforts to treat domestic relationship as the equivalent of traditional marriage. Accordingly, I'm opposed to this bill. I mean, how is that equal when you're forcing people to jump through other legal hoops that
it's not.
Okay. Straight married people don't have to. Minnesota considered a legal stranger state where same-sex partners in these states effectively have no chance to be designated as a surrogate medical decision makers for their incapacitated partner or loved ones. LGBT elders therefore generally need an advanced health care directive, which includes a living will and a health care power of attorney to protect themselves. They must remember to carry those advanced with them at all times. This is like Arizona. This is like having your papers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
It doesn't
sound
if an
like
individual
Minnesota
is rushed to the hospital without these documents, a loved one can still be legally denied access.
Wow.
Finally, problems may arise when an elder travels out of state, is one statement. I always recognize the health care director from another state. How is that equal rights,
it's
I
not.
Ask you. Okay. That's unbelievable. So someone can, you know, live with someone and love them for 40 years, and then and literally the problem is it's too late. By the time the person dies, then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, we found your AHD. Now we'll let you in. Oh, your partner's already dead. That's too late.
Yeah, but I'd expect something like that in Mississippi, but Minnesota? Really?
Well, they have Michelle Bachmann. Mm. So, you know, Minnesota's capable of crazy stuff. California's capable of crazy stuff. We allowed Prop 8 to pass.
Let's dive into the right-wing world, see what else is doing, shall we? Oh, Rush Limbaugh. Human rights, you know, that's a kind of gay in French, isn't it? Rush Limbaugh, yes.
The term social justice just means liberalism. Human rights means liberalism.
Uh-huh.
All these fairness just means liberalism.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Human rights means the exact opposite of human rights. You think the regime cares about American human rights right now?
The regime.
Not in the slightest.
The regime. It's a French word.
All right. One of the most entertaining things I've seen in right-wing world recently, Jim, is them going bat crazy over the fact that there is a Muslim Miss USA.
Yeah.
What?
That's a...
Well, she's obviously not a very devout Muslim if she's posing in a bikini.
Oh, no. A couple of years ago, she was in a pole dancing contest for a radio station.
Okay.
So apparently she's not all that devout.
She's not that Muslim.
Yeah.
The Miss USA pageant crowned Miss Michigan, the latest Miss USA, 2010 Miss USA. She hails from the large Arab-American community in Dearborn, Michigan. It is a Lebanese-American and the first Muslim to ever win the crown, which is... Made the right way.
Gay in French.
Go berserk. Oh, but wait, it gets better. There's a Carrie Prejean sort of tint to it. She defeated first runner-up Miss Oklahoma, who garnered headlines when she responded to a judge's question about immigration policy by saying she was perfectly fine with Arizona's radical new immigration law. So, of course, they're now alleging a liberal bias against her.
Whatever.
blah, blah.
Oh. Yes, liberal bias. Talk of human rights and equality. Yeah, we'll take that.
Okay. Gretchen Carlson on Fox and Freak.
Miss Oklahoma, she was first runner-up, and she talked about supporting states' rights. Here's what she said. I'm a huge believer in states' rights. I think that's what's so wonderful about America, so I think it's perfectly fine for Arizona to create that law. She's talking specifically about the immigration law. So a lot of people are going to parse this today, and they're going to say, did she lose? Was she first runner-up because she supported the Arizona immigration law? And did the Muslim American win because of the whole PC society that we find ourselves? Yep.
And is Gretchen Carlson an idiot? That's another question.
Well,
she's a former beauty queen. So
there you go.
One conservative author opined the surprising frequency of Muslims winning beauty pageants makes me suspect an odd form
it
of
happened
affirmative
once.
Action. It's the pageant conspiracy.
There's a pattern here.
Someone needs to send Sandra Bullock undercover. Conservative radio host Debbie Schlussel.
Oh, yeah. She's a piece of work.
I must have missed her. Where do you get that show?
On your feelings.
Debbie Schlussel blamed the win on the supposed politically correct Islamo-pandering climate in America.
Islamo-pandering?
That's great.
That's a new word.
Islamo-pandering climate.
It's time for Miss Congeniality Part 3. I love it.
That is climate change.
58 minutes after the hour, we'll finish up Right Wing World after the break on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh yeah, baby, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Oh no. This the oil spill, it is becoming a full-fledged disaster movie. I'm seeing on CNN hurricane warnings. Richard in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hi, Stephanie. I hope that they give some urgency to getting this thing cleaned up before we go into the full hurricane season, or I think they're going to need a lot of that Parmesan-smelling stuff that the janitors put on the kids' barf.
Yes.
When that oil comes ashore. About 7 miles inland.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to need Ben Affleck or something. This is turning into a. There's going to be a giant wave hitting New York soon. I don't.
No, it's going to hit inland water sources.
Ben Affleck.
Fresh water.
I think, as Rube Pundit said, I think Godzilla is going to rise from the sea at some point. This is just getting worse and worse.
What disaster movie was Ben Affleck in?
He was in all of them, wasn't he? Which one am I thinking of? Someone will tell me. You know what I mean.
The one with the asteroid?
Oh,
perhaps.
Armageddon? Okay.
Yes, Armageddon. Thank you. Thank you.
But he was in it. Yeah, okay.
Dan in Seattle with a point about the new Muslim beauty queen. Hello, Dan.
Heaven well. Hi, Stephanie. Say, I just wanted to add some base insight into the Miss USA situation. Nobody cares about what anybody said, about what Miss Oklahoma said or what she said or what anybody said. The girl is extraordinarily attractive. She's just plain hot, and that's why she won the beauty contest.
Yes,
thank you.
That's the way it works.
So much for
contest.
The whole politically correct Islamo-fascist conspiracy theory.
But she's not blonde.
But the
you're
right-wing,
not allowed to win if you're not blonde.
The right-wing blogs are making her out to be a terrorist in a bikini. Seriously.
It's hard to hide a bomb in a bikini.
Yeah,
but, okay.
The Oklahoma embryo was saying, talking about states' rights. Well, she's too young to realize that's code for,
slavery.
Yeah, it sounds good. All right, StephanieMiller.com, check it out. You can email us all there the old-fashioned way. Executive producer, Crystal Boy, voice of deity, Jim Ward, associate producer, Rebecca Taylor, or me, Stephanie Miller. Rebecca is also tweeting now.
Yes.
All the kids are doing it.
At Rebecca_Taylor. And you tweeted a link to that, by the way, just so you know.
Of course I did. The one thing we've learned on the Stephanie Miller Show, friends don't let friends tweet bored, do we, Chris?
That's absolutely true.
Some things like that that some people that shall go unnamed, but that might be Chris LaVoy, have gotten the Stephanie Miller Show in a great deal of trouble.
Really? Yes.
For instance, a North Carolina waitress out of a job after griping on her Facebook page about the $5 tip she got from a couple who sat at their table.
Oops.
Yeah, exactly,
you're
Chris.
Fired.
Just saying a cautionary tale for you.
I don't gripe about my tips.
Because you don't get it.
Exactly. That's a good thing about this job. Yeah,
I'm telling you, Facebook and tweeting is just another way for people to get fired. That's all I'm saying. It's
drunk
just
tweeting. Bad idea.
It's become another outlet for getting yourself in trouble.
Yeah. Oh, you have no idea what I say about you on my Facebook page.
How do I find it? See, if I knew how to find it, if I was... He knows that I'm that it's safe because I have no idea how to figure it out.
Exactly.
All right. Rick in Canada writes about Bastard People Oil. I think that's a fitting name for BP. You should play that every time you refer to them in their blowout
job. I'll tell you why I can't put up with you people, because you're bastard people.
Thank you for calling Bastard People. May we help you? All right. Also, happy primary day, everybody. Here's something new. A mayoral hopeful in Florida said someone broke into his home last week and left marijuana rolling papers in his bathroom drawer.
Oh,
oh did I?
Oh, someone broke in.
Trudy Tally. Oh. Trying to send me off, dude.
Why would... And he reported that nothing else was stolen. Only rolling papers were left.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, here's a beaver stack that I...
my stash down the toilet. I shouldn't have said that.
You know what, though? Rolling papers aren't necessarily used for marijuana. I mean, people do roll their own cigarettes.
Yeah. Okay, here is a beaver stack from Jennifer in Pustahalala, Ohio. Pataskala, Ohio. I think I said that right. It's for Tom Brokaw. That's not for me. Ohio.
Yeah, this is not in Illinois.
This is a Steph Show inside the Beaver Stack, which I think we probably should be less than proud of. Dear Steph, this past weekend we hosted a monthly, Jennifer. We host our monthly poker game that we have with our friends. Since I was unable to pawn my two adorable girls, age 9 and 12, off on anyone that night, we were stuck hoping they'd stay upstairs entertaining themselves. The plan worked till my brother, their favorite uncle, came to play. My 9-year-old was instantly downstairs updating my brother on everything she's been doing since he last saw her. Her softball team won a tournament the previous weekend. I told her to go get the trophy to show him. Once my brother sufficiently admired her trophy, my daughter asked to show him her latest piece of art, which happened to be a ceramic animal that she made in school. She turned to my brother and excitedly asked, "Do you want to see my beaver?" The look of horror on my brother's face is hard to describe. She said,
"Nice beaver."
Wow. Thank you. There's no good answer.
There's no good answer to that.
Thinking her uncle's response was enthusiasm, she yelled, "It's glazed!" Once I was able to get up off the floor from laughing so hard, I explained that she had made a ceramic beaver at school in art class and was very proud of it. When she returned with the art, my brother pretended to admire it and asked my daughter why she chose to make a beaver. I was not expecting her response. My sweet little child explained to her uncle that sometimes she hears a radio show that mommy listens to talk about beavers, and they're always laughing, so she thought the beavers must be funny animals. I'm constantly driving my kids back and forth to different activities. I find it's easier if I listen to the Stephcast, only $4.95 a month, and buy a year in advance, going... my kids are usually listening to their own iPods, and I didn't think they really paid much attention. That's not going to hold up in court, Jennifer. Anyway, thanks for inspiring one of the funniest things that's ever happened at our monthly poker nights. It'll be hard to top that. Yes, Dad.
Poker?
That just met her.
Oh, no.
What? Nice beaver.
I thought the kids had their iPods on. Okay.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Yeah, maybe we should refrain from the...
Yeah, Jim.
Woodland creature humor.
Mm-hmm.
It's being misinterpreted wildly.
Yes. And now, a story about a dog. This would happen to me because, you know, since I moved to New York, Fred's been a little frustrated. He currently he's eaten every pillow in my apartment.
Hmm. Are they your pillows or are they your ladies?
No. That'll come out of the,
the deposit.
Security deposit. Right. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Retiree spends over 7 years doing a 5,000-piece jigsaw puzzle and then finds the dog ate the last piece.
Oh, no!
It had cluttered up Jack Harris's dining table for almost 8 years. Nevertheless, the 86-year-old was determined to finish his 5-foot-long, 5,000-piece jigsaw puzzle. When he saw it, he thought the painstaking process was complete. He stood back to admire his work, only to find that a dog may have eaten the final piece. And they don't make that puzzle anymore.
No. Bless his heart.
Dear. Oh, dear. Well, all right.
You could try to retrieve it.
Oh, I'm sure it's already been
like I tried to get my baby Jesus back from my manger scene?
Yeah, from your little doll show?
No, you have to wait for the baby Jesus to come. You know what I mean? From a different area.
Yeah.
Okay. Chris, could you take your organ out? Here is the story. Julie in Seattle sends us about a George Wreckers. Before he hired an escort, Wreckers tried to spank the gay away.
Yep.
According to the Miami New Times. What do you do with a little boy who likes cross-dressing and playing with dolls? If you're George Allen Wreckers, you extinguish the boy's feminine behavior with a sometimes violent Pavlovian regime while your scientific team observes through a one-way mirror. That's what the Baptist minister did in the early 70s at a clinic he opened at UCLA called the Feminine Boy Project.
Oh. Mm.
In 1974, Wreckers, a leading thinker in the so-called ex-gay movement, was presented with a four-year-old effeminate boy named Craig, whose parents had enrolled him in the program. Wreckers put Craig in a play observation room with his mother, who was equipped with a listening device. When the boy played with girly toys, the doctors instructed her to avert her eyes from the child. On one such occasion, his distress was such that he began to scream, but his mother just looked away. His anxiety increased. He did whatever he could to get her to respond to him. Craig became so hysterical and his mother so uncomfortable that one of the clinicians had to enter and take Craig screaming from the room. Wreckers' research team continued the experiment in the family's home. Craig received red chips for feminine behavior and blue chips for masculine behavior. The blue chips could be cashed in for candy or television time. The red chips earned him a swat or spanking from his father. Researchers periodically entered the family's home to ensure proper implementation of the reward-punishment system.
Wow.
That's what most parents want, people all up in their business like that. Mm-hmm. After 2 years, the boy supposedly manned up. Over the decades, Wreckers, who ran countless similar experiments, held Craig up as poster boy for behavioral treatment of boyhood effeminacy. At age 18, shamed by his childhood diagnosis and treatment, Wreckers' poster boy attempted suicide.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wreckers, whose early experiments were the first to ostensibly demonstrate a gay cure, resigned, of course, from the National Association for Research and Therapy of Homosexuality last week after it was revealed a gay escort had given him nude sexual massages. Mm-hmm. Narf, however, stands by his science. By his science. They consider that science.
You know, I got news for Wreckers. There are plenty of very masculine gay guys.
What?
Yeah. They're just not as obvious to you, pal.
Yeah, a lot of them are in the military.
Yeah.
Bernard.
So did he administer the spankings himself, the Wreckers guy?
No, in this particular story, it was the father who did the manly spanking. Okay. Bernard Goldberg, let's finish up.
I hope that kid's okay today. I really
do. Yeah, I know. Me too. There was no follow-up as to, you know. But obviously, many kids like that successfully commit suicide, so it's just really sad. Bernard Goldberg on O'Reilly. Let's finish up our right-wing world here.
Liberal journalists, and forgive the redundancy in that phrase, but liberal journalists don't reflect American concerns and values very well on a whole bunch of issues.
Mm-hmm.
But they do reflect liberal concerns and values very well. They do that with a passion. So that even though 70% of the people of Arizona are for the immigration law, even though something like 60% of the American people in general are for it, they're focusing, spending almost all of their time on the opponents.
Mm.
Yes, the people who are the victims of it.
That's right.
Those liberals, will they stop at nothing?
Yes, and as we mentioned earlier, they just did a new poll showing the majority of Americans are for comprehensive immigration reform, not this draconian Arizona law. Yes, clearly only traditional family values, people like George Wreckers, can stand up for real American values.
Mm.
We liberals would have no idea what that's all about.
It'd be poetic justice if one of his victims had become the rent boy that got him in trouble.
Yeah.
That's the way it worked in the
TV. If they fell in love during their reparative therapy. Oh, God.
That happened. Well, you know, that's my favorite story about that, as you know. The two original founders of
Exodus? Yeah.
The ex-gay movement?
Mm-hmm. Exodus, yeah.
They ran off together in a gay way.
Yeah. Okay. The most gay way possible.
I just love that people get trying to get in for meetings. Where are those guys? What's going on? Are there, 18 minutes after the hour, Scotchmore Right Wing World, as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Eek, I just spewed on my dashboard again. It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Gene writes, Steph, I thought all Ben Affleck's movies were disasters. Oh, come on now. That's... Armageddon was the movie I was thinking of, the disaster movie.
Or were you thinking of Pearl Harbor?
Not Geely, whatever that one was. All right. Let's finish up the right-wing world. Glenn Beck on the Fox News.
This administration is now using religion as a political vehicle for social justice and socialism, something I've taken a lot of heat for. Mm-hmm. Your church is, there's a chance it's been infiltrated, and it's got some nasty things, and now they're merging the EPA with faith.
Like
it is time for religious leaders to take a stand.
Oh, your churches and your pageants are being infiltrated by Muslims.
You know
part
who,
of the Islamo pandering PC something.
You know who was for social justice?
Jesus.
Oh, my God.
That hippie. You know what he called God? Allah. Because that's what it is in Aramaic, his native language.
Okay, Newt Gingrich, frankly.
I've said unequivocally, a person who decides to file a lawsuit against the United States military in the middle of a war should not be a Supreme Court justice. And by the way, a bad enough lawyer that she was defeated 8-0 unanimously. Every liberal in the court voted against her.
Which shows she's more radically left than them on that.
And by the way, she's very narrow in her focus.
Wait a minute. She's defeated by liberals, but shows that she's more radically left.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes, it's the only conclusion to be drawn, Sean. You're a genius.
Okay.
How did he get so far in life?
Against the military. She was defending
Maybe
a
he was a rent boy.
Okay. All right. You know what? I don't even have the energy for that. Let's, just move on.
Do you need an aspirin?
Yes. Steve in L.A., you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Steph. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Hey, I think we need to, and the Democrats obviously have a bad time of actually packaging something, and I think we need to package this liability limits on the BP oil spill as the BP bailout. So when the Republicans come at us, like McConnell did the other day on Meet the Press, and said, well, BP could go under if we take away the liability limits, that's like bailing out BP. I mean, we can't bail out the bank, so we should just start recalling or naming it the BP bailout anytime that they want.
The bastard people bailout. Exactly. Thank you. Did you know, Jim, we've been talking about the Parmesan cheese-smelling powder that the janitor threw on Kid Barf.
I don't remember it smelling like Parmesan cheese.
Yeah, I don't remember anything like that.
It made it smell worse, whatever it was. It was orange.
It was orange. It was bright orange.
We never had that. We just had a mop.
So BP has chosen a more toxic, less effective oil dispersant manufactured by a company with close ties to the oil giant so they can make even
Good
more
move.
Money.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's the Halliburton
BP rounded right exactly. BP rounded up a third of the world's available supply of dispersants, has been deploying them aggressively.
Make everything worse and make a profit at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Great. BP has supplied more than 400,000 gallons of a dispersant sold under the name Corexit and manufactured by Nalco, a company that was once part of ExxonMobil and whose current leadership includes executives of both BP and Exxon. Another 805,000 gallons of Corexit are on order. According to EPA data, Corexit ranks far above dispersants made by competitors in toxicity and far below them in effectiveness in handling southern Louisiana crude. Of the 18 dispersants who the EPA has approved, 12 are found to be more effective on southern Louisiana crude than Corexit.
See, if Obama were the socialist people claim he is, we would have nationalized the oil companies by now. But then we would have to invade ourselves like we did in Iran in 1953. Which,
critics suggest there may be a conflict of interest,
in
BP's choice of Corexit. It's a chemical that the oil industry makes to sell to itself, basically, said one analyst.
Wow.
Scientists warn that dispersed oil as well as the dispersants themselves might cause long-term harm to marine life. A Corexit product was used to clean up the Exxon Valdez spill. Workers suffered health problems there, including blood in their urine, assorted kidney and liver disorders. Okay.
And coal is another nightmare waiting to happen.
In other oil spill news that will piss you off, Transocean held a closed-door meeting with shareholders Friday, just days after, remember, the executives were in front of Congress? The CEO ignored questions from reporters, but the company said in a statement it would distribute $1 billion in dividends to shareholders. Meanwhile, as they passionately argued to limit their financial responsibility for the disaster, they filed a court request to cap their liability at $27 million. Analysts, by the way, estimate the cleanup could cost up to $8 billion. Transocean, how about this for kahunas? How about this for tarballs? They got a big set of tarballs. They actually made money from the disaster, collecting over $400 million from insurers, leaving a profit of $270 million after the cost of the rigors.
Analysts made a lot from insurers. Oh, yeah, Larry Silverstein, who owned the World Trade Center.
So let me get this straight. Nobody, none of the decedents of the 11 guys killed, they haven't gotten any compensation. No injured people, no fishermen haven't been compensated. The Transocean shareholders doing very well. Very, very well. And they made money.
Follow the money.
Bink. Okay, Janet Napolitano yesterday.
We're all working together to say, all right, what happened here? What didn't? What power should MMS have had that it didn't have? What powers did it have that it didn't exercise?
Yeah, a lot of stuff to get to the bottom of.
Yeah, and why didn't MMS show up to the hearings yesterday? They could have used a good grilling from senators.
Yeah, really.
There's enough blame to go around here. All right, 29 minutes after the hour, back with more on the latest on the oil spill and today's primaries as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It's something no man could understand. Think of the most intense pain you've ever felt and imagine feeling that for hours.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Jim in Illinois on the oil spill. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing today, Stephanie?
Hey, go ahead.
Good. Yeah, I worked for the company that you mentioned, which is Nalco, that sells this dispersant. And
right.
I don't agree that it's a good idea. It's just putting the problem somewhere else by using the dispersants. Mm-hmm. The company is not owned by ExxonMobil. It was never owned by ExxonMobil. They had a joint venture, for products that were sold to the oil industry. And subsequently, Nalco bought out ExxonMobil's interest in that, and they do have a division down there in Sugar Land, Texas that services things having to do with oil and refineries and so forth like that. But I just wanted to correct that. While saying at the same time, I don't think it's a good idea.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's kind of common sense. Senator Joe Lieberman had the same thought you did about why MMS wasn't there.
There's one set of witnesses that are not here, and I must say that's from MMS. I regret that the MMS leadership has chosen not to appear before our committee today, because really they need to be asked the same questions I'm going to ask Homeland Security, Coast Guard, and BP. Because MMS, as I've mentioned, must approve or reject the oil spill response plans for wells, which is where this accident occurred, before those wells can be drilled.
And I guess it's been known for a really long time that MMS, which is, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Interior Department, has been so cozy with the oil companies for over 10 years now.
The president mentioned that a couple of days ago.
And now the head of MMS is retiring next month.
How convenient.
Mm-hmm. We had David Mattingly, CNN correspondent, on earlier in the show today, and he was saying he was impressed with some of the questions they're asking at these hearings, though. I mean, you really do have to take a crash course. Even reporters, he's going like, what's kill mud? What do they call that? A junk pack? A junk toss? what? I mean, even this explanation on 60 Minutes as to how this happened, it was like, oh, I put the two little doohickeys in the thing. But, I know that whatever it is, the thing that's supposed to detect, it already was broken.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they knew they weren't getting accurate readings, which is like, just a negligence.
Well, how, why were they allowed to go forward if they weren't getting accurate readings?
And then BP ordered them to do the technique that would get the oil out faster and not the way Transocean wanted to do it. And it's Lamar McKay, a BP spokesman.
As a responsible party under the Oil Pollution Act, BP, we will carry out our responsibilities to mitigate this environmental damage and the economic impacts of the incident.
Yes, in the most weaselly way we can, and hope that it eventually goes to the corporate-friendly Supreme Court and our judgment gets whacked down.
Because
did I say that out loud?
They're a corporation. They have more rights than we do.
That's right.
Yeah.
They can be nominated to the Supreme Court.
Doug Suttles, a BP chief operating officer.
There is absolutely no intent to ever produce this well. We intend to fill up the bottom portion of this well with cement. It will never be produced.
Oh, okay. How about all the other ones, by the way? Right. You know, Rachel Maddow, I think, showed one last night that's, you know, could be an even bigger disaster. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, I mean, this is only the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
What's that?
It goes 2 miles deeper than the one that blew up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, this is just drawing our attention to one thing. But, you know, that's what we don't realize is how where else this could happen next and on what level. Right. I mean, it's. All right. Celebrity Stack, Jim, this one had your name written all over it, because I know how much you like when you get listener, you know, help for critiques on your accents.
yeah, Jim loves that.
What was the one about, that wasn't really a Wales dialect on it, and Jim's like, yeah, okay, it's a mouse. I was doing a mouse. Russell Crowe snaps over accent critique. Actor Russell Crowe, first of all, I don't think you want to...
No,
critique Russell Crowe to his face.
You don't want to critique him about anything.
No.
He'll throw a phone at you. Russell Crowe stormed out of a BBC radio interview after suggestions that he had made the British legend Robin Hood sound Irish in his latest. The BBC reporter said he felt the impression from Crowe's performance was that Robin Hood was an Irishman who took frequent holidays in Australia.
Yeah. Oh.
You've got dead ears, mate. Seriously, dead ears if you think that's an Irish accent, Crowe said. Then the reporter asked Crowe if the accent was meant to be Northern English. No, I was going for Italian. Missed it? Well, me. The actor could then be heard muttering, I don't get the Irish thing. I don't get it, before storming out of the interview.
You know what, though? I've heard clips of him in Robin Hood. And
oh, it's not as bad as Kevin Costner's, for God's sake.
He does sound quite Australian. And from what I understand... Robin Hood was not Australian.
No. The north of England is about as far from Australia as you can, can get. Linguistically.
Yeah, and there is no Sherwood Forest
in
Australia.
What the hell accent was that Kevin Costner was doing in the...
Oh, God.
He wasn't even trying.
No, he... It was on and off accent.
Yeah,
he
wasn't even trying.
He took a little trip to England and then Boston and then I don't know what it was. Yeah, he was not
Malibu. No.
Well, it's a bit like
by the way, Malibu.
A bit like K-12, you know, with the I am the captain of this ship. You will follow my orders, Harrison Ford. You know, it's like, well, okay, it was there and then it wasn't. But the accent is quite different from Irish. They do have
Justin
similarity, but.
Justin Bieber fans have gone to war with Twitter. Hell hath no fury like a Bieber fan.
We've all gone to war with Twitter.
Well, what's wrong with Mama's lazy Twitter friends? Come on, let's go here. Hell hath no fury like a Bieber fan scorned after Tweeber, Twitter.
Tweeber?
See? After Twitter adjusted the algorithm for its trending topics, apparently he dropped from the list of trending topics entirely. Fans struck back and got him back on the chart by Sunday.
Oh, thank God.
By Sunday, they got...
What?
Let's go, my Twitter peeps.
I don't think you've ever been a trending topic for anything.
The world.
Well, get me on there, lazy bastards.
The planet is dying, and they're worried about Justin Bieber's Twitter status.
And who wouldn't be?
Exactly.
What the hell?
All right. The superficial writing about Miss USA is an Arab. Not only that, she beat Miss Oklahoma, who supported the controversial Arizona immigration law. If Texas doesn't secede by noon, it's the Mexicans' fault. She said she's against illegal immigration, but also against racial profiling. What the... That's like saying you're for the Holocaust, but against genocide.
Oh, boy.
All right. David Blaine wants to be set adrift in the ocean inside a glass bottle.
I'm sure some people would agree with that.
Yes,
we have just the ocean for him.
Let's set him adrift permanently.
And let's go. Maybe he can find out what's going on exactly in the Gulf. Maybe he can find out exactly how much oil is coming out. He also says he's obsessed with breaking the record for sleep deprivation. We have a tip for you. Get a morning radio show.
Yeah, that'll, yeah. Although you don't have a morning radio.
No, you don't.
We have a morning radio show on this coast. You no longer have one.
Yeah, well, I had to move to Calcutta, didn't I?
And yet you're still late every day.
It was raining.
It was raining. Yeah, it was raining here, too.
It was raining here, too, and I was on time.
Lindsay Lohan's assault on booze continues. Page 6 says she raged on at 10 Oak. I don't know where these clubs are. The other night, for absolutely no reason. I shouldn't say no reason. The reason is that Lindsay is crazier than a bat eating. Source says she spotted a New York Rangers, two players, I don't know, sitting at a table with model somebody. She flipped out and tried to get them thrown out. Only a delusional Lohan would think she can get someone thrown out of a club. Bitch couldn't get a dead rat thrown out of a Waffle House. I don't understand. Have you ever tried to get someone? Every story about her is her trying to get someone thrown out of a club. Is it possible? I
just don't want to be in a 10-mile vicinity of her.
Well, considering...
I've never tried to get someone thrown out of a club. Have you? Now I have to try it, I guess.
It seems like she might be the first person to be thrown out of a club, from what I've heard of all her antics.
Man.
Maybe she's just trying to beat him to the punch.
See, I'm not the only one.
D-listed writing that Woody Allen supports Roman Polanski. Woody says Roman has already been embarrassed by the whole thing and has suffered enough. Woody went on to say that Roman is an artist and a nice person who did something wrong and he paid for it. Roman quickly issued this response. Woody, you're not helping.
He didn't pay for it. He ran from it.
Who's going to issue another endorsement? The Catholic Church? It's as if Pete Doherty vouched for Lindsay Lohan's sobriety. Or if Jesse James testified in court that Tiger Woods is not a massive slut. Yeah, some character witnesses. Simon Cowell will be knighted by Queen Elizabeth next month during her birthday honors. I certainly hope he doesn't critique the knighting, because...
That was the worst knighting I've ever seen.
She won't be amused, I'm guessing.
We are not amused by the edict.
All right. I couldn't resist that. All right. So it is primary day, everybody. Primary day. Go, Joe. Go. Go, Joe.
Stephanie, because of your military experience, you know that I am the person who will... What?
What?
Oh, sorry. I thought you were Randy.
Listen, he's a big picture guy. He's not a detail guy. He's Representative Joe Sestak yesterday.
I appreciate my Democratic establishment, but the status quo is not acceptable. And I respect Arlen Specter, but his time truly has come, and it's gone.
All right, we will tell you where the latest polling is on that and the other primaries happening today, 44 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
A mecca of misdemeanors.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Dressed in yellow, she says hello. Come sit next to me, you fine fellow. You run over there without a second to lose. And what comes next? Hey, bust the move.
Just bust the move. Eat it. Hey, guess who's in the next studio, you guys?
Young MC?
No. Slash from
really?
Guns and Butter.
Roses. Guns and Butter.
Guns and
cool.
Something. Yeah.
Does he smell? What? He looks like he smells.
Don't say that.
Shush.
What? He's a great guitar player.
I know he's a great guitar
player. I think they can hear us in the other room. Oh. Shush.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Wow. He's a great guitar player. Well, I can't believe you're next door to him.
Hey, they were interviewing... Thank you. They were interviewing Nikki Sixx last week over at the premiere on the other side of the valley.
Look at you. He had a name drop back. Mm-hmm. Linda in North Carolina voted for Joe Sestak today. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Stephanie.
Yes.
I want to ask all my friends in Pennsylvania that if you haven't gotten out to go to the primaries, please go and please vote for Joe.
Yeah.
He's terrific. I've met him 3 times, and I think he'd be a wonderful senator.
What are you doing in North Carolina?
Losing weight.
you're at the fat farm. Okay. So you voted absentee.
I did.
Stephanie.
What?
On a fat farm?
Overnight,
that's rude.
Overnight FedEx to get the ballot, overnight to send it back. And
have
to overnight it down. Just so that I could vote for Joe.
All right. Good for you. Thank you,
everyone,
Linda. All right.
Everybody
all right. There
in
she goes.
Radio land, please.
All right. Thank you, Linda. All right. There you go. Go, Joe. Go. Oh, someone send me a future husband. Man tried to swap his baby for a beer at a convenience store.
Sure.
That is.
Who wouldn't?
Awful. You can get like a case.
Hope it was good
baby.
Beer, at least.
Kind of. You need a better fiscal conservative than that. You get a whole case for a baby.
At least a case.
Look at you! You have a baby! In a bar.
Well, in a liquor store.
A moron. If he came home, you traded a baby for one beer, you moron.
He was thirsty.
All right. By the way, I think this is the D-listed story on Lindsay Lohan throwing yet another drink in someone's face at a club. He says, last night I ordered my second vodka before dinner. You know what the waiter said to me? Bitch told me they were out of vodka. Dude might as well stab me in the throat while punching a puppy between the eyes. I collapsed on the ground and hollered like Halle Berry in Monster's Ball after she found out her son died. And you know who I blame? Lindsay Lohan. If she didn't continue to waste booze, the world wouldn't be suffering a vodka drought.
A vodka drought? I doubt it.
All right. Yes, throw liquid for God's sakes, but not the vodka. Okay, so the big Pennsylvania primary is today, as we talked about. Senator Arlen Specter yesterday.
I believe that the seniority, the experience is what it takes to see to it that Pennsylvania gets its fair share.
Boy, the vitality coming out of that man is just knocks
just
me over.
He didn't sound a thousand.
Who am I? Why am I here?
Yeah, he kind of sounds like Admiral Stockdale, doesn't he?
Yes.
And he looks like the guy, who's the melting guy? And is it Raiders of the Lost Ark? Which one
the
am
Nazi.
I thinking of? Pardon me?
The Nazi who looked at the Ark. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's melting.
Melted.
Yes. As the primary.
My career has moved back and to the left. Back and to the left.
What's about you today?
That's a Grassy Knoll joke, see, because he was the single political.
Warren Commission.
As the Senate primary remains balanced on a knife's edge, Governor Ed Rangel is walking back his state party chairman's claim that nominating Joe Sestak over Arlen Specter could be cataclysmic. He said not cataclysmic. I meant phantasmagoric. What did I say? Did I say cataclysmic? No.
Computer says no.
But anyway, he went on to say, but certainly Specter is a stronger general election candidate. No.
Computer says no.
No. The polls show Sestak in a closer, much closer race, tied with the Republican candidate, and Specter losing by like 8 or 9. New Quinnipiac poll shows Sestak only up by 1, though. So this could be a squeaker in Pennsylvania today. Rendell's comments, though, signal Democrats once opposed to Sestak, maybe reconciling themselves to saying Senator Sestak. Ed Rendell, can I just say, he has a habit of being, what's the word I'm looking for, Chris? Wrong.
Wrong.
Oftentimes wrong. He said, we will lose a terrific congressman, and when he loses to Arlen, he fades into political obscurity. That was the prediction he made. You remember he made his other prediction that people aren't ready to vote for a black guy. And
yep.
Whatever.
Oh, dear. All right. He did say one thing I agree with, though. He's been tweaking the teabaggers a lot lately.
Good.
He said there is no movement. About the Tea Party. He said the media, not just the conservative media, the mainstream media, has made the Tea Party guys out to be an impactful movement, but they aren't. Good for him. I think that's what I've said. They're like a creation. They're a media.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Senator Blanche Lincoln also in a primary today.
I know that people are very disappointed in Washington right now. And quite frankly, I am too in a lot of ways.
Yes. Democrats with no balls that water down the health care bill and stuff like that. I hate that, don't you? Okay, Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter, Democratic candidate there in Arkansas.
If you send the same people back to Washington, you're guaranteed to get the same result. And the message of change for Washington is definitely resonating.
And Rand Paul, who is Ron Paul's son, who is, he's quite a bit ahead now, isn't he?
Yeah,
in the latest poll.
He's going to win.
Yeah,
18 points.
Yeah, he's going to win, Rand Paul in Kentucky.
Some say when you win the primary, which I like, when you win the primary, you'll have to run away from the Tea Party. But I don't think so.
You know, Jim, that Yertle the Turtle endorsement just isn't what it used to be, is it?
I think that we should all vote for the federal government.
Sorry, what?
Huh? Well, maybe people couldn't understand who Mitch McConnell wanted them to vote for.
What?
Rand Paul has shocked many political observers by maintaining a double-digit lead in the poll over the past few months on Trey Grayson, the hand-picked protege of Senator Mitch McConnell.
Of course, you should know that Trey Grayson is Kentucky's chief elections official. So,
oh, good, hell, so things might magically turn around.
Magically flip to, yeah.
Mitch McConnell, of course, appearing in ads for Grayson. Many view the race as a referendum on McConnell's leadership. Yeah, because he's so visually appealing.
I think it's right where my leadership. Possibly a referendum on our lips.
Get him some lettuce, stat.
Maybe that's what happened. Maybe they didn't even filming the commercial. He kept falling on his back, and they couldn't.
And just the
maybe they didn't bring enough lettuce to the shoot.
Just the arms flailing, you know, in the air.
Well, I can't. Somebody turn me over. I got, how are we going to win an election unless you turn me over? I can't win.
You know, here's the thing about the whole teabag thing, though. Check this out. So Ron Paul's supporters, who are the teabaggers, mm-hmm. Rand Paul, they had nothing nice to say about McConnell, scorning him as a liberal, an embarrassment.
Wow.
And an advocate of the bank bailout passed under Bush. So this is, to me, the Tea Party so far, they're forcing Republicans to keep, you know, going farther and farther to the right, right? And, you know, increasingly mm-hmm. fringe political positions. I mean, it's to me, I'm like, good for the teabaggers.
Yeah.
Good. Get some more crazies in there. Why not? Flo in Sunrise, Florida, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hi, good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning.
I was just listening to Michelle Kaczynski on MSNBC, and she's downplaying the tar balls that are washing up in Florida. They have mm-hmm. 22 skimmers going after them, and she said, oh, it's from the cruise ships and all the boats, and no one
what?
Ties it to the oil huh? spill.
Tar
oh,
balls
no way.
From cruise ships?
How would tar balls be coming from cruise ships?
And they have 22 skimmers cleaning it up, but this is an everyday occurrence.
Oh, sure.
To her.
What the hell?
Wow.
I know.
Wow. That's a new spin I hadn't heard. All right. Thank you, Flo.
Okay.
All those right. insurance commercials, by the way. Oh, wrong Flo.
Yeah, not that
no,
Flo.
No, that's a different Flo entirely.
I do like that Flo, though.
All right. Don't forget, tomorrow, of course, Hump Days with Hal Sparks.
Uh-huh.
Plus, Carl Frisch will co-host Right Wing World. And this is something I thought I'd never hear from you, Chris.
What?
You were like, Rita Cosby wants to come in studio with you for an hour tomorrow.
Yes.
Wow.
Well,
and I said I'd be delighted. She is delightful.
The last time she was on, you told her that you would have her on for an hour when her book came out. Her book is coming out.
Uh-huh.
Oh, she
go.
Has a memory like a steel trap,
yep.
That gal. All right. So all of that on tomorrow's big show. That's it for us. We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.